So looking at the Mishnah at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, and the Anshei Knesset HaGdola say three things. They say, Asu Siyag LaTorah, and Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, and Heyu Mesudim Badin. But we're going to focus on Asu Siyag LaTorah. Do you see that at the top of your page? So Asu Siyag LaTorah, which literally means make a fence around the Torah, which means make a siyag, who is this dictum addressed to? Who is supposed to make this siyag? Like when you think of the word siyag, who makes a siyag?
Depends on what?
In general, I'm saying.
We do.
We meaning who? Every individual? Do I make a siyag? Or is it some sort of body that represents Klal Yisrael? Who would you say? Chachamim? Any chachamim? I mean, can I get a group of... Who would these chachamim be identified as? Who institutes chachamim? If you take a look... In the Rambam, in Hilchas Mamrim, I'll just read to you the Rambam, when he talks about Siyogim, he says the following. This is Perek Aleph, in Hilchas Mamrim. And the Rambam says, Bezdin HaGol Sheb Yushalayim Heim Ikar Torah Shebal Peh Veheim Amudei HaHora Umehem Chok Umishpat Yotzil Chol Yisrael. So who's endowed with the authority and responsibility of Horah? Who is the, which body is considered the pillar of Horah? It says the Anshei, it says the Beis Din HaGadol Sheb Yerushalayim. Did anybody know how many people sat on that Beis Din? It was the highest court in Israel.
70,
correct. 71 elders. And the Rambam says, what are they in charge of? He gives you a whole list of responsibilities and laws that they have to initiate. He says, Al pi haTorah asher yorucha, and the Torah commands us to listen to the Torah that they give us. Elu takanos, gzeros, vamin hagos. Where would you put siag here? In what does it sound like when you hear the word siag? Takanos, gzeros, or min hagos?
Either takanos or
gzeros. Yeah, probably gzeros, maybe takanos. But why would you say it's most connected to a... Why is the concept of a fence around the Torah connected to a gzera?
Because gzera is like an edict, and it's like sometimes tough to follow an edict.
Can you think of a gzera that the Rabbanan instituted? The Amudei HaHorah, the Beis Din HaGadol Sheb Yerushalayim? Can you think of any gzera?
That chickens considered meat?
Exactly. Perfect example, David. Right. Excellent. Perfect. So if you mix chicken with milk, the Torah permits it. That's how we paskin, like Rav Yossi Aglili, and the Rabbanan prohibit it because they're afraid that if you can have chicken with milk, what will you eventually come up with?
Meat
with milk, which the Torah prohibits, correct? So what's that called? A gzim. In the language of the Mishnah, it's called a siag. Siag means to set up borders. Siag means not to come too close, because once you come close to this kind of mixture of chicken and meat, you might come chicken and milk, you might come to the next thing, which is what?
Man.
Real meat, you know, with milk.
Yeah.
Which is the real basar b'chol v'tor
ra'isa. Right. You're saying, right, this is more severe.
Correct. So we set up a siyag and we say, stay away from something less severe because eventually it might lead to
right.
A severe violation. You've heard of the Isser Yichud?
Yeah.
What does Yichud mean?
I mean, I don't know if I'm exactly on the ball, but from what I understand, it's like you're not allowed to be in the same room.
And what? Is the door locked or unlocked? Like, for example, in this room, if
yeah,
I would be alone.
Even if it's unlocked, I think. No.
But let's say anybody can come in at any time. That's not Yichud. Yichud means privacy.
Yichud means like no one can come in. Like,
exactly.
Right.
And what are we afraid of?
You might be...
Over Gilui Arayos. You might come to a more serious violation. That's called a siyag. It's interesting, you know, that one of the compilation of brisos that are addended to the Mishnayos in Avos is called Avos de Rabbi Nosson. In Avos de Rabbi Nosson, he has a very interesting language. He says, Ezu siyag sha'asasa Torah l'dvareha. What does he mean by that? Sha'asasa Torah l'dvareha. He gives the example of not having chometz in your possession over Pesach. Mm-hmm. He calls that a siyag sha'asasa Torah. Yossi, what would you say that means? That the why would you not want to bring chometz in? Why would the Torah say, Bal Yerovai Motz?
You might eat it.
You might eat it. So the real severe Easter of chometz is Achilas chometz. but the Torah prohibits you from even having the chametz around. You might say, look, if I have the chametz on my table, I won't eat it. If I put it in the shelves, I'll close, I won't. No, you have to take it out of your rishus. That's called the siyag sha'asa Torah l'dvarei yichud, according to the shita of at least two rishonim that I know of. Yichud is an isu d'oraisa. The Torah prohibited yichud. That upgrades it to a high status, but it's a siyag that the Torah made for its own prohibition of giui arayos. So we now have three levels. We have the level of an Iser D'oraisa. We have a level of a Siag D'oraisa, which also is prohibited by the Raisa. Then we have a level of a Siag, which is instituted by whom?
Rabbanan.
Who's the Rabbanan in this case? Again, the word Rabbanan doesn't sit well with me because it can mean many different things. Like
Sahadir Yishalayim.
Correct. The Beis Din HaGadol should be Yishalayim. 71 elders. The highest court in Israel. They can institute Siag. But I'll be honest with you, I don't think that's what the Mishnah has in mind. Because if the Mishnah is addressing the Anshei Knesset, the Beis Din HaGadol from Yerushalayim, otherwise known as the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, actually the Anshei Knesset HaGadol goes even further than that, historically, then why is this something that I have to learn about? You know, set up a separate Masechta, Sanhedrin, that dictates what the Sanhedrin have to do, what they have to implement, and what they... You know, we said that they were the Abudei Aharah, so tell me how to institute a takana, and a gzeira, and a minhag. By the way, this is very interesting that the Rambam has minhagim here. And you and I think that a minhag somehow spontaneously exists. You know, well, we'll do this, we'll do that, let's have a minhag. Because, let's say, for example, in some yeshivas they play basketball in Yom HaTzmaut, right? Is that a minhag?
Sort of fell into it.
Some people do certain things on Lag BaOmer, crazy things. Do you remember Rabbi Zucker used to go? Is in your time? He used to take the guys up to Meiron.
We went up to Meiron. I don't know if it was Zucker who came.
Was that our time out?
We definitely went to Meiron. I know.
So what happens is when you go to Meiron, there are a lot of different things going on over there. And you have to make sure that, you know...
Yeah, it's pretty crazy over there.
It's pretty crazy. You have to make sure there's some supervision. You know, so you have to make a siyag. The question that I have is, a minhag or a siyag has to be instituted formally. It's like there's a judiciary body, it's the Supreme Court of Israel. They will institute siyag, they will institute minhag. So just before, because 10 Jews get together in a room and they decide, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, doesn't make it a minhag. It's got to be elected, it's got to be instituted by the Beis Din HaGadol of Yerushalayim. But as I said before, coming back to our Mishnah of Asu Siyag LaTorah, I don't believe that this is addressing the Beis Din HaGadol of Yerushalayim. I think, Eitan, what you said before is correct, that each one of us has to make a Siyag. What does that mean when I say that each person has to make a Siyag?
Like, it's not going to be enough if somebody... Like tells you, somebody establishes like some type of fence, you have to come to terms with it on your own.
Do you remember in the case of Adam v'Chava that they made a siyag? What was the one mitzvah that Hashem commanded them?
Don't eat from the
eat of the das. And do you remember make a siyag? The Torah only prohibited eating. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't eat from the eat of the das. What did they do?
They ate it.
Eventually they ate it, but what did they tell the Nachash?
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
The Nachash Salam.
And then the Nachash pushed them. You remember this?
Yeah, Chava told
the Nachash that you're not allowed to touch.
She added the Chumrah. Chava added the Chumrah.
Correct. That's what's that called when you say don't touch something?
Wait, what happened? Like they told the Adam and Chava not to eat it.
Hashem said to Adam and Chava, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, but they said we're not allowed to touch it. They added something to the Torah's prohibition by instituting.
Are you saying they made
their own siyah? So we have here a case where a person makes his own siyag. The Avester Rabbi Nosson quotes that episode of Adam and Chava of making a siyag by prohibiting the gear, that you're not even going to touch we call it salotiga. That's called Asu Siyag LaTorah. That's an implementation of this rule of Asu Siyag LaTorah. So I learned two things from the Avester Rabbi Nosson. Number one, I learned from the Avester Rabbi Nosson that Asu Siyag LaTorah is not just addressing Beis Din HaGadol of Yerushalayim, it's addressing each and every one of us as individuals. We have to make a siyag. And that's what Chava did. And number two, I learned something else from the Avester Rabbi Nosson. That it was a good thing. It was admirable for other mechava to add this extra siyag to the Yisrach Yilu Eitz Adat. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is not like that. The Gemara in Sanhedrin said they made a mistake. They shouldn't have done that. Because you know what happened as a result of them extending the Iser to Negiah? What happened?
The Nachash had a way to like say, no, it's not really what Hashem meant.
Because what did he do?
Because he said, Hashem didn't really tell you to not touch it.
No, he pushed them. And what did they do? They touched the eights. And he said to them, well, nothing happened.
Uh-huh.
So he fooled them, only because they made the siyah. So I was wondering if that Gemara in Sanhedrin is contradicting our Bryce of Avos Rav Yonasan right here at the beginning of Masechet Avos. And I came to the following conclusion. There's no contradiction.
What's the...
You want to try that? Again, listen carefully. On the one hand, the Avos Rav Yonasan advocates making a siyag, even on a personal level. And the example that he gives is the case of Adam Vachava. That was admirable. On the other hand, the Gemara criticizes Chava for creating the siyag, because at the end of the day, it set up a chain reaction, an avalanche of events that led to their downfall, and they ate from the Eitz Hadas. Because they thought, you're not allowed to eat from the, you're not allowed to touch the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash proved to them, hey, nothing happens. You know, it's like the first time a person violates Shabbos, usually what happens is somebody says to them, oh, this was true 100 years ago, I don't know if it's still true today. So somebody tells them, violate the Shabbos, they violate the Shabbos, and nothing happens to them. You know, hey, where was the lightning that came down from heavens, right? They expect to be zapped, you know, electrified on the spot. So other Mechava thought, boom, you know, they would die on the spot because they touched the Eitz Hadas. But that's not so. My contention is that there's no stira between the Avos Rav Yonasan and the Gemara in Sanhedrin about other Mechava.
Well, the thing is about that is that it's not like when he told them to touch it, like they must have still known, like even though they made the siyag, they must have still known that nothing was going to happen if they touched it, because he didn't actually tell them not to touch it. He just said.
So why did they fall prey to the Nach? You follow my point?
You're right. I don't know why they fall prey.
Yeah, apparently they in their minds what happened.
They were like, wait a second, we shouldn't have made the siyag, you're saying?
No, I'm saying that maybe they confused the nature of the siyag. In other words, what happens when a person takes on an extension?
Oh, like it confused the nature of it.
You're right, eventually it gets confused. You know, the borders and the boundaries get all blurry in his mind. He eventually thinks that this was the original Issa. And that's apparently what happened in the case of Chava. She at some point was convinced in this whole situation, the whole episode, and the dialogue with the Nachash, that she can't even touch the Eitz Hadas. But that's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never enjoined her from touching the Eitz Hadas. So I think that the Gemara in Sanhedrin would advocate making a siyag, even on a personal level, but you have to be careful about one thing. What do you have to always keep in mind when you make a siyag? Speak a drop loud if you don't mind.
What's the siyag?
Correct. What is the siyag? The difference between a siyag and what we call gufo shel isur. Never make that, you know, never add that together into one concoction. Always maintain a sensitivity to the distinction between what's asur and what's a siyag. Now, this idea of staying far away from an avera, I think it appears over and over again throughout Chazal, throughout Shas. For example, what do you see in the Gemara in Shabbos? What do we tell a Nazir? Do you know what the scenario is of a Nazir?
Roughly.
Go ahead. Give it a shot.
He took a vow on himself to, I guess, for whatever reason, or to be closer to Hashem. And there are certain responsibilities.
And restrictions. One of which is he's not allowed to...
Drink wine.
And what do we tell him now? Let's say the shortcut to get from here to here, instead of going all the way around, is you cut through a vineyard.
Uh-huh.
So what do we tell him?
Don't go through the vineyard.
Correct. Schar-schar. Schar-schar means go around.
Uh-huh.
Now again, this is not technically a zero or a siyag that was instituted by the Bez Nagol of Yerushalayim. But we're encouraging, we're recommending the Nazir, instead of going into the... Imagine if he goes into the vineyard. What tempts him?
The grapes.
the grapes, he might just pop a few into his mouth, and especially...
Oh, you're not allowed to eat grapes.
He's not allowed to eat grapes, and especially if he's going a long way through one vineyard after the other, so eventually... No, I'm saying if he goes to the... But I'm just saying if he has to get from here to here, imagine a whole area of vineyards, you know, California, you know what I mean? Like, you have to travel from one vineyard to the other. Eventually what might happen is if he runs out of supplies, he's allowed to eat from the vines. You know what that's called? If a person runs totally out of supplies and he's allowed to eat something that he's normally not allowed to eat?
Kuch nefesh.
So what's terrible about going through the vineyard? The answer is you can't deliberately put yourself into a place which might lead to pikuach nefesh. That's why, for example, before Shabbos, we heat up the water for milah. Because we need, for antiseptic reasons, after the milah, to use the hot water. Now, if, let's say, there's no hot water, we'll do the milah, according to most Rishonim, even though it means that we'll have to heat up the water after. But we'll certainly not advocate jumping into the milah without preparing for it Erev Shabbos. And that's in general the case when the halacha approaches a situation in which you could avoid getting yourself into a danger area, go out of your way to avoid that danger area. Again, we're not necessarily talking about physical danger, we might be talking about spiritual danger, correct? Let's take a look at the Gemara in Soto. Kol haroes Soto v'kulkula yazir atzmo min hayayin. A man sees a Soto, and she's going through this whole process of what we call hashkas ha-Soto. She has to drink from the mechatus, this concoction. And he sees the kilkul, you know, the depravity that she's reached. And then he begins to understand that drinking wine... And again, it's not only wine, but anything that might have intoxicated could lead to this situation of a woman who is disloyal, who is unfaithful to her husband, and therefore, a person who sees that, again, if he looks too carefully, and he starts thinking to himself, he should be very careful about drinking wine. Yazir atzmo min hayayin. You can take upon yourself a siyad to avoid yayin.
Wait, what? I'm sorry. What is... I kind of get confused with what that like.
The sota is this woman who's accused of adultery.
Right.
And more often than not, what led to her situation, what she lost her wits about her, because she was intoxicated.
Right.
So if a person sees this depravity that she goes through, you know, the whole process of sota, which is in the parasha of Nosa.
He sees like her drinking wine and stuff?
No. He didn't see her drinking wine, but he knows in his mind that that's what probably led to her situation. Yazir atzmo min hayayin, he should move away from wine. Who are the two people in Chumash who got a little bit carried away with intoxication and it led to a terrible depravity?
Nadav Aviv?
Nadav Aviv, interesting. The Gemara says about Nadav Aviv, Shesuyim and Ayayim. But most Rishonim assume that they weren't drunk. But there were two individuals in Tanakh that were really, really drunk. Nadav Aviv drank a Revius Yayim.
They were. Really?
Most
go back all the way to the time of the Marvel. What?
Most Rishonim hold they weren't drunk. Oh wow!
Shasa Yayim, they drank a kezayis, because the Rama Paskin said any Kohen who's working in the Mikdash and he drinks a kezayis Yayim and he does the avodah is completely possible. It's disqualified. Mm-hmm. But there are two cases. Take a look at your page. See if you know what I'm referring to.
Not David. No.
Not David, but way back in the time of the Chumash, who got really, really stone drunk in the Chumash itself?
Well, Rebbe said it.
Did I mention it?
Kind of. Noach.
Noach, and who else? You're halfway there. You're doing great.
He knew the answer.
And Lot, correct? Lot, by the way, the story of Lot is considered like the paradigm of intoxication. You know, to the extreme. That's called Shikur Shel Lot. Because as a result of that, he had relations with his two daughters. I mean, that's how bad it got. Noach was also pretty embarrassing. You know, whatever happened over there, the different opinions of Chazal. But all this was a result of over-exaggerating with regard to wine. So a person should be very careful about these things, yeah?
I heard one time a drasha that was actually a big act of chesed that, by Lot, that the daughters thought that the whole world was destroyed like a mammal. And so
they wanted to procreate.
Exactly. They thought that they had to procreate the whole world. So they were using the yayin for a good thing.
But Lot, he didn't think the world was completely desolate.
Yeah, that's right.
So he was taking advantage of the situation.
Correct. And probably because he was dead drunk. Uh-huh. So we got to be careful about drinking. But here's an interesting case in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. This is the last source on the first paragraph of your page. Reish Lakish Omar Ein Adam Over Avera Elim Ke Nichnas Bo Ruach Shtus. A person doesn't violate an Avera unless some sort of Shtus enters into his brain. How would you translate the word Shtus? What did he say?
He was really.
No, I just like made it like a funny like English word like
shtus, a shota. What's a shota?
No, I just made a joke. I was like stus,
right? Nah. Stupid.
Like, no.
Stupid person. But yeah. What's a ruach shtus? It's what you call temporary insanity.
Or foolish or.
Did you ever hear that phrase? Temporary insanity. He becomes insane. You know, something takes over him. Some emotional, dramatic experience, and he loses it. So the question that I want to ask you tonight is the following. If he lost it because this Ruach Shtus, it wasn't really his decision. Mm-hmm. He wasn't working with a full deck of cards. So if this Ruach Shtus overcame him, you know, took him over, overwhelmed him, why is he considered guilty?
You know, it's like, I mean, I'm not going to say this the first time. I think about this stuff all the time. Like obviously, like, When like Yetzer Hara, like, you know, if he, you know, takes over, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, it was that your decision? Like, I mean, it was the Yetzer Hara.
Right. But isn't and here Reish Lakish is saying that a person will not violate Avera less what goes into him? Ruach Shtus. Ruach Shtus is even worse than the Yetzer Hara. You know, if you have the Yetzer Hara, you have the Yetzer Tov. You know, at least you're in an equilibrium. You know, you can make your decision and the ball's in your court. But Ruach Shtus means that he's a Shota at that time. A Shota is not considered responsible for his actions. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, Reish Lakish calls him a Chote. He's violating a Chet. So he's responsible for a Chet. On the other hand, Reish Lakish is saying he was overwhelmed by this Ruach Shtus that, you know, went into his... Do you have a Dibuk? You know, it's like a Dibuk.
So you're saying that, like, the Ruach Shtus and Yetzer Hara are kind of different in a sense that, like, Yetzer Hara, you can't make the argument that it's not... You making the decision, it's still you making the decision.
Because what balances or counterbalances against the Yetzer Hara?
Just the Yetzer Tov.
Yetzer Tov, you have both.
Right, you have both.
So you made the choice decision. So you could have gone this way or that way.
Getting drunk.
But a Ruach Shtus.
You're saying the drunk, like it's the alcohol.
Yeah, it's like he's intoxicated. He's not working with all his marbles. He's got, you know, and we know, for example, I don't know if you've heard in France, to this day, there's a legal concept called temporary insanity. A crime of passion. So, for example, if a man finds his wife in a compromising situation with another man, and he kills that man, or even if he kills his wife,
right.
He could sometimes be let off the hook in a French court of law.
Right.
It's a crime of passion. That's what Reish Lakish means here. Crime of something just takes over you. You know, you're not thinking rational. But if that be the case, why is he called a chote? Where is his guilt? If the Ruach Shtus came in and took him over.
Where is it called? The Chote? Oh, is it Avera?
It says, yeah, Ein Adam Over Avera. It sounds like he's violating an Avera.
Because he didn't.
And a person, and we know that there's a system of reward and punishment. What were you saying?
You make this argument like, well, back to what you were saying, like the siyag. Like, he didn't put a siyag.
Exactly.
Drinking the alcohol.
Excellent. Perfect.
There you go.
I like it. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, you heard of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Mira Rosh Hashiva, he says the following, he gives a mashal. He says, imagine if there's a wide pit. If I stand at a distance, am I going to fall into the pit?
Shouldn't.
Even if a wind comes by, it could be a very high velocity wind, but if I'm 50 yards or 100 yards away from the pit, I'm not going to fall in. And maybe a tycoon or something, you know, a cyclone.
If you're 50 yards away from the edge, you're saying?
If you're away from the edge, nothing's going to push you in. But what happens when you're very curious? And you start coming closer and closer until finally you start looking inside the bar. What's down there, right? And then what happens? The simplest wind, it doesn't take much of a wind, will push you over. And people have People have died in situations where they were mountain climbing and a wind came. You know, once you're really close to the precipice, boom, any sort of wind can carry you over the precipice. So you're a chote. Why are you a chote?
I'm saying.
Because
you came too close to the edge.
You came too close to the edge. And this idea that a person has to make a siyad, which means a fence, that he shouldn't come too close, or the nazir going into the vineyard, this is an idea of Asu Siyag HaTorah that repeats itself over and over again. Any questions?
Yeah.
Take a look at the Medrash in Tehillim, which is on the second line of your first paragraph. It says, on the Pasuk Hayom Ra'av Hayonos, do you remember that Pasuk? It's describing the splitting of the... Yeah, this is from Hallel, and it's describing the splitting of the Red Sea at the time that Bnei Yisrael came to the Red Sea. You know, it wasn't such a simple matter that the sea would split, because Bnei Yisrael weren't on such a high level there. You know, when they left Mitzrayim, they're in the Mentah Shari Tuma, and they halolu of them
when
they escaped from Mitzrayim. So the Chazal want to know what is written here. Is there a code word in the Pasuk Hayom Rav Hayonos that could tell me why the Dead Sea split for the Jewish people? And the Medrash says, Ra Arono Shel Yosef Yored L'Yam. When the people went down into the water, they took with them the Aron Shel Yosef. That means the casket of Yosef. If you remember when Yosef, before he died, you know, going back 2-3 centuries earlier, he had enjoined his brothers to make sure that when they go out of Mitzrayim, they don't leave him behind. He doesn't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. He wants to be taken along to Eretz Yisrael, to Eretz Canaan. So what happens? The sea all of a sudden beholds that not only are the Jewish people going into the water, but they're taking with them the Aron Shel Yosef.
How they get it? Like, did they bury it? Or?
Yeah, the Aron Shel Yosef was at the bottom of the Nile River, and Chazal talk about how they were able to lift it up from the bottom of the river. Now they're taking it all the way over to the Yam Suf. And the Yam Suf now sees the Aron Shel Yosef. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yonos Hayam, the sea has to split. Mipnei Hanos Min HaVera. Because just like the waters have to flee in front of the Jewish people and split, so too Yosef fled from an Avera. He ran away from an Avera. How do we know that Yosef was Nas min Avera? Shenemar, because it says, Vayonas hachutza, and he ran outside. In what episode that the Torah testifies, the Torah records, did Yosef immediately run outside?
Bathsheba.
The story with David.
Bathsheba.
We're talking about way before that.
Potiphar's wife?
No. Excellent. Potiphar's wife. And she grabbed hold of him, and what did he do? He ran out. The same word, Vayonas. Do you see it? Ahayon nos miponov. So just like he ran away, so too the sea is going to run away. In other words, in the merit of this great act, in which Yosef overcomes temptation, and he runs outside so that he shouldn't fall prey to this Avera, to this powerful passion of a woman who's holding on to him, in that merit, the sea splits. So the question is obvious. First of all, why did he leave his beged behind? And the Ramban asks this question. The Ramban says, well, couldn't he have wrestled with her? He was stronger than her, says the Ramban. He could have ripped his clothes out of her hands. And the Ramban gives a very strange answer. He says, L'chvod gvirto. He had respect for his mistress. V'lo ratza lahotzi miyada b'kocho agadol bimena. Even though he was stronger than her, more powerfully could have overcame her, and he could have taken it out, he didn't want to do it. L'chvod gvirto. I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, no?
Big stretch.
To say that he had to... Why does it bother us when we see this L'chvod Gvirta?
Because she's in the middle of trying to get him to have an affair with her, right. And now we're worried about her kavod.
Very strange, no? So the Bali Musa go into this, but Rav Chaim Shulevitz has a very unique answer to the Ramban's question. Why did Yosef leave his Begid behind? Says Rav Chaim, Yosef HaTzadik didn't want to wait one extra minute. It would have taken him 10 seconds, I'll grant you 30 seconds, a minute, until he would overcome and take the Begid. During that minute, who knows what could have happened? He was facing temptation in the eyes. Vayonas achutz. He completely runs out. He doesn't even think.
What happened? Like, she had his clothes and
she was grabbing onto his clothes and he just ran out and I don't know, again, maybe it was his cloak, I don't know what it was, but then she, if you remember, she humiliated him. She went out into the public and she said, look at this Eved Ivri that they brought, Litzachek, he's playing games with us. Here's this Begid, you know, like he's doing funny things, you know, so she blamed it on him. And he put himself in this situation. Why? Because by Yonas Achutza. Says Rav Chaim, that's the great lesson that Yosef HaTzadik taught us. And in that merit, the Yam was nas and split because of by Yonas Achutza, because Yosef, when they saw the ark, because Yosef was nas Achutza. The message is clear. Don't linger about. Don't delay. You know, you think, oh, you're a big shot. You're a tough guy. You know, you can handle the Eight Sahara. No. See, the point is, does a person deliberately put himself into a jeopardy, or should he avoid a nisaya? You know, some people say, oh, I can do it. Do you remember Shlomo HaMelech? He said that. You know, a king is not allowed to marry too many wives. Mm-hmm. But what did Shlomo HaMelech say?
He had a lot of, I don't know what he said.
He said, I'm okay, I'm good. Don't worry about me, I'm okay. And at the end, they brought him down. Even someone as great as Shlomo, we have to learn a lesson that we shouldn't expose ourselves deliberately to danger. We have to avoid dangerous situations, spiritually dangerous, as like the plague. For example, if Chas V'Shalom a fire was here, the worst thing you want to do is linger around. You know, you think, oh look, you know, my favorite book is going to get ripped, you know, get burnt to shreds. You know, this is my yearbook from high school or whatever. You know, my friends all sign on it. You know, my album from elementary school. Get out of there! The fire's going to catch you. So when you're faced, you know, eye to eye, you know, the Yetzer is looking you, the temptation is looking you in the face. Get out of there! It's too dangerous.
I feel like when the notion of like someone.
So the message is very clear here that the schar, the merit of Vayonas Achutz is so great that we thank God, you know, we were able to get this great miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, and that's why Yosef left his beggar there. The Gemara Bava Basra, which is in the middle of your paragraph, is very fascinating. The Gemara says, what does Yishayahu HaNavi mean? V'otzem einov miros bura. He closes, he clamps down his eyes so that he shouldn't see evil. And Yeshayahu HaNavi praises this person for reaching this very great level, this achievement of otzem einov miros bura. Says the Gemara in Bava Basra. Amar Rab Chiya bar Abba. Who is this person? You know, imagine you have a. So, where does he choose to go? He has two paths to go on to get to where he has to get to. Right? He's got to get to work,
and there.
And he has two streets, okay? In this case, it's not a vineyard, but what is it? It's Nashim Ha'omdos Al Hakvisa. In those days, they used to do their washing out there in the public. And they had these large basins of water. Sometimes they did it at the riverbank. And the women would scrub the clothes in the water with some, obviously some detergent, some agent. And they would have to bend down because the water was lower. And a man who looks at those women in that bent position, he's really not doing the right thing. Because it could lead to all sorts of hurriyaveira, all sorts of different, you know, kinds of violations and so forth. So this person that Yeshayahu HaNavi is describing is someone who doesn't deliberately look at these women when he shouldn't be staring at them. Hechi Domi, the Gemara says, I don't understand. If he had a different road and he chose this one, he could have easily taken a different path. They're both equal, get him to his destination at the same time. And he, Dafka, chose to go where? To go down this path. This guy would be a Rasha. Rasha who? You're praising him. He's a Rasha. So the Rashbam explains, Rasha who? Afal Pisha Otsem Einov. Even though, as Yeshayahu HaNavi describes him, he's closing his eyes, he's still called a Rasha. Why? Why is he a Rasha? Shalohaya lo lekarev. He shouldn't have gone close. Yo, imagine this guy. He's walking, deliberately chooses this path, walking by the women, and he's closing his eyes. No, he's got his blinders on.
It's kind of, you're saying he's like this guy because he's like, he has the two roads. He knows it himself that he doesn't need to look at that.
Correct. He thinks to himself, look, I'm going to go down. I got my shades on. You know, I got my blinders on. I'm not going to look.
In a sense, it's probably because of like, he kind of like deliberately goes to that one to prove that he doesn't need to look.
And comes along the Rashbam and says he's a Rasha. Why is he a Rasha? Shalohoya lo lekariv l'sham.
Because he
violated this principle of his kariv. You're not allowed to be miskariv. The kirv itself, the coming close to the temptation, not going to that area, that itself is a prohibition. Because imagine, you know, in the old days, Eitan, they were tempted to do Avodah Zarah, right? So you go down past the Avodah Zarah. And you're going to say, well, I'm great, I won't be tempted by the Avodah Zarah. You know, there are people even today who worship sort of some sort of idol worship out in the Asian areas, you know, in the East. And people go there and they say, oh, I won't be tempted, I won't be allured by it. And unbelievable things happen. You know, some guru gets a hold of you and zaps you, you know, I don't know what he does. And
I think it's because it's like...
David, you're very quiet. I don't know. What are you thinking here?
Not even letting him speak. No, no, like, I feel like if he quotes, like, it's not just like a deliberate, like, he's deliberately going to that one. But because the reason that they're calling him Russia is because he, even though he's closing his eyes, like, just like the act, he doesn't realize that the act of closing your eyes makes you, like, kind of, like, disbanded from the act of closing. Like, he's like, why? Like, he has a part of him that's thinking, why am I closing my eyes? Like, you shouldn't be closing your eyes. Like, you should just be, like, avoiding it. You see what I'm saying? Kind of. Like,
correct, because closing your eyes is not a foolproof solution to the problem. You know, it's very hard to keep your eyes really, really closed, you know, as you go by this temptation. You know, you want to get a look. I mean, we're all human. You know, you're going so close to it, you're curious, you want to see.
Like, well, what's
see. It's a great opportunity to enjoy this experience.
It's the choice to make a different path. Like,
take a different path. You want to go down that path and you're closing your eyes. But don't you realize that once you close your eyes, you're coming too close to the edge of the pit and any wind can carry you over. You see, it's the same idea.
Like the only thing that's
so what's the actual thing
that's Gemara? Oh, so the Gemara is going to go into another possibility where he had, you know, he had no other opportunity to go, and he could have had different options of going and not going, and he chose the option of going, but he chose a different path. Then he's considered a tzaddik. Or alternatively, the Gemara says that he didn't know what was going on in that path, and he was otzei meinov as soon as he realized what was going on. But if a person deliberately chose to, you know, that path, that's a different story. And where is it in Tanakh that we find that God took a person or a people all the way around the long way because he was afraid if they came too close, who knows what would happen? Let's look at the pasuk. V'lo nacham Elokim derech eretz plishtim ki karovu. The Ramban learns that Hashem took the people when they left Egypt on a long circuitous route until they got to Eretz Yisrael. And why? Because Hashem realized that if they go the short way, you know, the shortest point, the distance between the two points, the straight line, had they taken the straight line, they would have been exposed to the Plishtim. And the Plishtim were the enemies of the Jewish people, and maybe they would be so overwhelmed by fear. But again, I think the Torah is teaching us an important lesson. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to take us, meaning the people of Israel, on the long route, so that we're not put in that situation of danger, in which we might be tempted to want to go back to Mitzrayim, so too we should follow suit, and we should always try to be marking ourselves.
Is that why they wanted for so long? Is that why they wanted for so long?
And that's why it took them so long. It took them 40 years to get there at Kanaan. And all, what?
That's crazy.
Right, and all because Lo Nacham Elokim Derech Eretz Plishtim. He didn't want to let him go the straight way, because that would be too...
38 years.
Extra 38 years. But yeah, we have to learn a lesson for our lives from what Hashem is doing. That's the important thing. Hashem is sending us a message that we have to imitate His decision, with a capital H, His decision of taking the long way around. We started with the Gemara, if you remember, in Sota, that says that Haroa Sota B'Kukula Yazir Atzvo Min Hayayin. We had the Gemara in Shabbos that says, "Schar schar amrinu l'nazir." Don't go into the kerem. We have Yosef who's running away from Eishes Potifar hachutza vayonas hachutza, and we have the person who goes down the closer road. I mean, goes down that road with the Noshim Omdos al Kfisa, saying, "Don't worry about it. I'll be Otsam Einai." And he's called a Rosh. He should have gone the further road in order to avoid temptation. And finally, to summarize this whole concept of Asus Yoga Torah, we have the statement of Reish Lakish that Eino the Mosa Veirach and Nichnas Bo Ruach Shtus. It's that Ruach Shtus that we have to avoid at all costs. We have to go far, far away from the Ruach Shtus.